Well, hi there and welcome back to the My Love of Golf podcast. Thanks for joining us wherever you are around Australia or around the world. Really do appreciate you tuning in. This episode is a special interview that I had the chance to conduct somewhat recently with Chris Marino. Now, Chris Marino is the International Sales Director for Parsons Extreme Golf. Yes, you know PXG. Now, PXG are in the process of launching here in Australia in a full-scale way. The people at Champion Sports are the distributors here in Australia. They've taken on the brand and really putting full steam ahead behind PXG. Of course, you'll find it at Drummond Golf stores all around the country and you can get custom fit and all the good stuff that makes PXG so special. Well, now you can experience it at scale. So what better way to help launch the brand with my friends from Champion Sports is get Chris Marino on the line and tell us a little bit of the story about PXG, if you don't know that story, and a little bit about what you can expect from PXG. This is the first part of a two-parter. We're going to talk to one of the product tech guys in a future episode, but really now this is all about helping get everyone knowing that PXG is here in Australia at scale. You can get into your golf shops and get fit for it. It's an awesome product. It's something that I haven't had a lot of experience with and I can't wait to check it out. But you can hear all about it now on this episode of the My Love of Golf podcast. Chris Marino and myself, let's go. Chris Marino from PXG, Parsons Extreme Golf. Thanks for joining us on the My Love of Golf podcast. All the way over there in Canada, we're here to talk about PXG and you're going to help us here in Australia and wherever else in the world wants to know a little bit more about it, learn about the brand and its, I guess, new evolution, its new presence here in Australia. Firstly and foremost, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm looking forward to getting to know you a bit better and certainly PXG. How are you?
Yeah, good. Hi, Ross. Thanks for having me here today. Excited to chat about what we've been doing at PXG and as the expansion into Australia and New Zealand. So, yeah, well, appreciate it.
Well, we're looking forward to it. I know, you know, from the listeners that know the My Love Golf podcast know that I'm a Drummond Golf person. So it represents a pretty big chunk of the retail market in Australia, being, you know, Australia's leading off-course retailer with, you know, 50 stores around the country. So I can pretty much speak with confidence that my colleagues in those stores are very keen to get access to and be able to fit and sell and represent the brand that we have now access to from your partner in Champion Sports, one of our great premier partners in the Drummond Golf world. Before we get into the machinations of the distribution and how it's all come about in Australia and how we're going to see an expanded presence in Australia, Chris, for yourself, you know, let us know a little bit more about yourself, your role, your background with PXG, Parsons Extreme, and maybe touch on a little bit about what PXG is and what makes PXG so special.
Yeah, sure. So I'm kind of one of those golf guys that been in the industry quite a while, which is actually a bit unique to PXG. I think if people don't understand that, there's a lot of people at PXG that are not from the golf industry whatsoever, which actually creates a very unique perspective and look into the brand and how the brand has sort of evolved. I, however, am not one of those guys. I've been in the industry for quite some time. I worked in Carlsbad for, you know, just over 9 years for a golf shaft manufacturer that was actually just getting into the U.S. From Japan and launching products into the U.S. market. You know, roughly about almost 9 years ago, there was a small company that was kind of coming on the scene in Scottsdale. And I was already out to Arizona quite often visiting one of my accounts and heard about PXG. And I was like, wow, really interesting to hear what these guys are doing. So I went up and met Brad and Mike up at Scottsdale National, which is where the very first kind of PXG offices were. And just learning about what they were doing. And it, to me, it was eye-opening compared to all the other kind of OEMs that I was working with at the time. And so, you know, I thought it was definitely very, very different. And I remember coming home from that trip and telling my wife, I'm like, wow, this company in Arizona, they are thinking about golf in a way that no one really has been thinking about golf in, at least not to this point. And so, you know, flash forward just over 8 years, I've been with a company and kind of been working on this sort of international sales and distribution plan as we've evolved in as a company.
It must be a monumental task to get a golf company and a brand at scale up and running. I've been in the car industry before, the golf industry, and you know, was part of a brand that tried to relaunch in Australia and globally, and it was challenging. And that's with big car company dollars behind it, and you know, Formula One sponsorships, and so on and so forth. And it was a huge challenge, and ultimately not as successful as they wanted. It must have been a lot of work. You know, what were those early days at PXG like? You know, establishing retail networks, establishing production facilities, and everything that must go with it. What was that like? You know, paint a picture of how that came about.
Well, it was wild, I'll tell you that. We all wore 100 hats. You know, I'd be packing boxes one day, I'd be invoicing orders, we'd be calling customers, we'd be calling people, telling who we are. I mean, at that time, no one knew anything about PXG. I mean, it was 1 out of 1,000 people could tell you, oh, I've heard of PXG. And so it was always explaining that story of like, what are we doing here? And why is it different than everything else you see at your golf store? And, you know, we went for, you know, I think I'm employee number 30 or 33, something like that, where we were just a small team. We were a small team actually for several years, where we were just kind of constantly just trying to let people know who we are, what we're doing, and trying to get as much product in people's hands as possible. But, you know, the golf landscape in the U.S. and throughout the world is really broad, and it's heavily retail focused. And so it became a challenge, and it still is actually a challenge for us today. So, you know, it's been a process though.
Now, a little bit about the founder. You know, we've just talked about a little bit of the evolution of, you know, those early days packing boxes. I love those stories because, you know, and you say you wear many hats, and, you know, I've built a career wearing many hats, and it's probably one of my skills, and I hold it with a bit of a badge of honor that, you know, I can jump from different thing to different thing, and, you know, hopefully you and your colleagues, you know, learn a lot out of that as well. But, you know, let's talk about Bob Parsons for a moment. And, you know, he seems to be a special character. I've never met him. I do have a very good colleague and a customer and a friend who has met him. We'll talk about that in a second. But what draws you towards Bob, and what's Bob like in real life, and, you know, a little bit about his background and how it all came about for him?
Wow. Well, he's a dynamic individual, to say the least. You know, he's kind of unlike anybody I'd ever met, and certainly unlike a lot of the other executives at the golf companies that I was working with. You know, in my past job, we were working with, you know, high level people in the industry talking about product development and what they're doing. And then me coming to PXG and working for Mr. Parsons, it was like, wow, this is totally different. Not only is this guy a golf fanatic, which he is, and hit more golf balls than anybody I ever met, bought more golf equipment than anybody that I ever met, he really just is trying to create the best possible golf equipment available, no matter whatever the cost. And I think a lot of the industry is kind of set into sort of price constraints because, you know, retail in general dictates like this is what the market should be for pricing. And if you look at our early days at PXG, our pricing was all over the board because it wasn't about trying to fit a certain price point. It was just about trying to develop the best product possible. And if you look at our development costs for irons and woods, like sometimes we're 3, 5, 10x what our competitors are, strictly from the fact that we're just trying to push the limits of product development. And I think a lot of that comes back from obviously Mr. Parsons buying every golf equipment possible. Like you can't really necessarily buy your better golf game, but if you can, he certainly tried to do it. And he certainly is trying and continuing to develop the, you know, what he considers the best equipment possible. And regardless of the cost that it takes to manufacture it.
Is Mr. Parsons still actively involved in a week to week, day to day basis in the development of the brand and the continuing growth of PXG?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you can see it from commercials, and he still does a lot of advocacy stuff for the brand. So absolutely, 100%.
The thing that I, you know, really do admire about someone like Mr. Parsons is, you know, not only is he, you know, putting his effort, finances and interest into the golf industry, but, you know, he's also using it for some really good stuff, you know, to give back. And, you know, if you look on their website, you know, there's a little title there called Giving Back. How important is, you know, that part of, you know, Mr. Parsons having this golf brand and creating this ability to give back through, you know, the wealth that he's generated and all of the things that he's been involved with?
I think it's, I mean, it's kind of a foundation for him. I mean, you look at his foundation of his service in the military. He's not a guy that's sitting idly by, you know, with his money. Right. And he very well could do that very easily. I mean, the guy doesn't really need to do anything in terms of, you know, he could just sail into the sunset for that matter, but he chooses to be very active in the community, active in organizations, active in charities, active in golf. You know, he's got an opinion about everything and he is not afraid to say it, which is kind of impressive this day and age when you get a lot of people that are just hesitant to say anything or make a position on anything. So to me, I've always admired that. And what he's done with the Parsons Foundation is just, you know, it's very admirable. And
of course, yeah. I was just going to say, of course, you know, Bob's wife, Renee, is, you know, equally as active in the Parsons Foundation and seems to be very influential and instrumental in making some of that good stuff happen as well. Is Bob's wife, Renee, involved in the operation of the PXG brand as well?
Yeah. So again, I don't know how much everybody knows this, but, you know, Mrs. Parsons runs the apparel side of PXG. So, you know, Mr. Parsons, while, you know, he developed the equipment side of things, you know, Mrs. Parsons is running the day-to-day business for the apparel. And what her design team that she's brought on and the stuff that they're working on is, again, I honestly think it's unlike anything else that's in the golf industry from an OEM side of things. You got all these apparel brands that are out there, but then very few brands run an equipment and an apparel brand at the same time. And the way it's split, you know, with Mr. Parsons really driving the equipment side and Mrs. Parsons really driving the apparel side, driving the fashion lifestyle in golf, athletic bit to it. I mean, it's really impressive. So she's extremely involved.
I was saying before off air, I've had the pleasure of playing golf alongside one of your key partners from the Korean market. And I know how much value that apparel side of the business, as well as the equipment side of the business, how symbiotic it is in the success of PXG in the Korean market. So it's a really exciting time for the brand here in Australia to, you know, I guess have access to a platform like all of the retailers that you're going to get access through the Champion Sports alignment. Tell us a little bit about, you know, the evolution of the brand and its presence here in Australia. You know, why maybe someone like me hasn't seen the PXG brand at retail as prevalently as maybe people listening might have expected.
Yeah, so I'll try to, you know, kind of make this as short as answer as possible because it's actually a pretty long answer. But, you know, when it comes back to like the core of what we're doing at PXG, we want to be custom fitting golf clubs 100% of the time. Reality is you can't fit every single golfer 100% of the time because 100% of golfers don't want to be fit. You got new people that come into the game that, you know, are too maybe possibly scared to be fit, don't want to be, they find it embarrassing. So there's an aspect of where our brand wants to fit every single person because we know if we can get in front of you, we can 100% get you an equipment that's better for you and based on where your swing is to today. That's always presented as a challenge as we expand because, you know, you lose that really interactive, intimate sort of experience when you're kind of going through retail and retail. And I've worked at retail myself for 5 years and I understand the challenges that are there. And it's extremely competitive across the other manufacturers. But one reason that we're a little bit late to get to Australia is just the fact that we haven't been able to really find that right partner to kind of bring what we're wanting to do with the brand and fit people more on a one-on-one level than we have. And you know, we have great partnership with Pureform, which is now a Club Champion. And we worked with those guys for many years and like they provide the fitting type of service that we're looking to provide. You know, with Jason at Champion Sports, like we're trying to kind of provide that sort of type of fitting level experience to the Australian market for the first time. And, you know, the other answer to it is, you know, since we are kind of a new company still and less than 10 years old, it's just taken us a long time to get to Australia. So, you know, the U.S. has always been the main focus of the market, and then it's been branching out to all the rest of the markets and regions across the world. And so took a little bit longer than we'd like, but I feel like we got it right in the end here.
Well, know Jason and the team at Champion, and I know they are exceptional operators from the brands that they represent here in Australia. So, you're with some great people there. And, of course, I don't know the full level of the retail strategy. I know the drum and golf aspect of it. I know how we handle fittings. I've fit hundreds and hundreds of people over my years, and I know my colleagues, has put a lot of emphasis on the fitting aspect of it. We've got these great facilities with multiple simulators with all of the measurement technology that you need. Fitting bays, I've watched the evolution from two or three shafts now to the whole fitting wall type setup. So I know we're really excited to have access to the product. The market's pretty good here in Australia at the moment, and a lot of people are coming to the game, and a lot of people want to get equipment that is right for them, that gives them the best opportunity to play the best golf. And they might be one or two, three sets into their golf club journey. And, we know that golf club journeys ebb and flow through various evolutions. And I say to a lot of people that I fit, this might not be your last set of golf clubs. Like, things are going to change. We're going to age. Yeah. You're going to get better. And you'll be looking for something different out of your golf clubs. But, right now with this brand, what we're trying to do is, really build that philosophy that we've got the right clubs for you. And if we've got a brand that can transition through that journey with you, is really great, because, once you get a brand friend for life, you call them PXG troops. That's a term that we're going to have to get accustomed with in Australia. And you've got that full aspect of product, that's really strong for us to be able to represent the brand for its fullest intention for a really, very long time and very successfully. Talking about the product, there is an end-to-end suite of products in the PXG range, the new Black Ops range, in the drivers, fairways, hybrids. You've got the 0311 series in the iron family, the wedges, putters, and maybe I'd lost count, 12, 11, 13 putters in the lineup. It really is a very comprehensive offering of product. Talk us through a little bit of, what that new product is lineup looks like. And I'm assuming, I'm not sure if you went to the PGA show, I'm not sure if PXG is there. A little bit about the product and the evolution and what happened there.
Short answer, I did go to I was at the PGA show the past couple weeks. So spent a lot of time there, talking to people about the brand. And I think a lot of people were surprised. We didn't exhibit there, but I was there just because a lot of the people in the industry are there and our partners were there. So, but about the product line, it's certainly evolved, and by no means is it quite broad as what our competition's product mix is just yet. Now more than ever, though, we do have more price points. More than ever, we've got product that is kind of very affordable. We have product that's on the high end, mid end, low end, basically a product for all golfers. And if you look at when we started, 8-9 years ago, it was really just, we had one set of irons and it was one price point and we had one driver and that was it. There was no golf ball. There was no bags, hats, accessories. There was no wedges, putters. So all of this has evolved over time. And now I think we're in a position that we're stronger than ever, where we've got a category of 0317 player irons that are really just focused on the better player. Somebody that wants that muscle back or that cavity back or a combination set like that, that forged blade type of iron. And then you've got your Gen 6 irons, which are one of the longest irons out on the market, priced at a premium but not super premium price point, that are probably one of the best irons out there on the market today, in my opinion. And then earlier this year, in I think January 11th, we launched our new wood line called Black Ops, which is by far the fastest driver that we've ever developed. Carbon crown on top and bottom and extremely high MOI, just an unbelievable feel. I know everybody always says, oh, this driver is better than the last one. But this driver is the Gen 6 driver. I thought there's no way they can make this thing any better. And then this thing comes out and I'm like, wow. It's been quite a evolution, and, we've got two different types of wedges. We actually have two different types of putters at the moment. So, the range is quite extensive now, and then including the golf ball that we launched last year as well. So we really kind of have almost the entire suite of products now, within, relatively a short time, this last 8-9 years.
Talk to me about the golf ball. I've seen it. I haven't used it, but one of the colleagues had some and was using them and was speaking very highly of the feel and the performance that he was experiencing. Talk to us about the decision to get into golf balls and, you know, what's the strategy there with golf ball? Are we going to see several models or are we going to see just a couple of, you know, high-end, tour-level golf balls? What's happening there with the ball?
Yeah, you know, I'll get you a dozen for one. For sure we'll get you a dozen to try out.
I need them.
I mean, you know, golf ball is one of those things that's obviously it's very personal to most people, right? They usually tend to gravitate towards one golf ball and use it for all the time. You know, I know for myself, like I use the standard Pro V for the last 10, 15 years, and it's a fantastic golf ball. You know, our engineers, Brad and Mike, I mean, they've actually kind of been working on a golf ball project for PXG for probably 10 years. Probably one of the first things they did when they got hired at PXG was starting to think about making a golf ball. Now, granted, launching a golf ball would have been very strange 10 years ago, especially, you know, no one knew anything about PXG. But I think, you know, when we launched that product last year, it was probably about the right time to sort of introduce this to our portfolio. And, you know, it sounds silly. They always say, you know, the one ball that sort of does it all, which is kind of the tagline for the current PXG ball, but it's kind of targeting that type of golfer that, you know, maybe he's not the lowest spinning ball, but it is an extremely high performance, well-performing rounded golf ball for the masses. I do see, you know, something in the evolution of PXG where we are going to have multiple types of golf ball, lower compression golf balls, lower spinning golf balls. I think it's just a category we're really just scratching the surface on. But the first ball that came out is probably going to fit the widest customer base that we have.
Well, it's another one for my colleagues again to put into the shelf. And again, you know, we know how that works. You know, if someone's a PXG player, they're going to gravitate towards the golf ball. And you know, let's see the evolution of the ball as it comes out. It's always great to have the full representation in the retail space. Let's go back to internationally, and we'll come back to America in a second. Where are some of the other markets outside of the US where PXG has really met your expectations or surpassed your expectations in terms of brand and sales? Because, you know, I think Australia, we sort of, I guess, have an affinity with some of the other international markets, you know, in terms of how we operate. Where's the brand been very successful?
So, you know, excluding the U.S., as you mentioned, you know, we have a really strong presence in Europe and also in the U.K. That's been a market that we've been really involved in since the beginning. We also have a really strong team actually here in Canada too. So, you know, Canada shares the border with U.S. So there's a lot of spillover between everything that happens in the U.S. kind of also happens in Canada, but Canada, totally separate country than the U.S., of course. And so, you know, you kind of have to operate a bit differently up here. And then in Asia, I think it's always been well received. And the reason it's been always well received in Asia is kind of from the foundation of when we started the company. Really premium products, really flashy, really different type product. That really resonated with the customer in Asia, where they've been selling premium golf equipment for a long time. The one difference is it was premium from an expensive price point. It wasn't a performance type of product like PXG kind of came out with. So PXG came out super expensive, but also super high performance, which was a little bit different. So I think for Asia, it kind of instantly took off. Markets like Korea and in Japan and China, we have really strong relationships all throughout Southeast Asia as well. So I'm often there a few times a year just working with our close partners that we have.
Just for the benefit of some of the people listening, just to elaborate on, you know, what you're talking about, the Asian market loving that premium product and not having access to performance. So if you think about brands like Zexio and you know, Honma and several other brands that are maybe emanate out of Japan, but they're very forgiving, technology-rich forged clubs, but, you know, for the player that wants something more performance-oriented, it just didn't exist. So that's to the point of where PXG came in and hit that spot there. You know, great performing iron, great premium product, and the performance that the real golfers, the serious golfers, wanted on the golf course. And I think, you know, that will be a very successful point for us here in retail in Australia as well. We see a lot of customers like that, and it'll be great to have, you know, that type of offering. The UK, it's a big market for golf, despite inclement weather for a good part of the year, and, you know, almost being seasonal golf up there. But, you know, how did it, because we sort of gravitate to, we look towards the UK a little bit for many things. You know, what's been the reason for the success of PXG in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Scotland, the home of golf, you know, I always have been, had my eye on the UK and in London, England and Scotland, that region, because it is such a golf crazy market. As you're aware, like people have, they golf year round. It could be, you know, 2 degrees out and people are still golfing. It could be -2 degrees out and people are still golfing. So you kind of go to a culture where that just loves golf and is passionate about golf. And so I think, you know, if you can sort of succeed in the UK, you know, you're setting yourself up for succeeding all over the world. And, you know, if you look at the way that the industry is in Europe, I mean, most of the European market kind of all looks to the UK because that's where a lot of the OEMs are set up, that a lot of the product ships out of the UK for the European market. Obviously, with the Brexit thing that happened a few years ago, those, the European market and UK market are still extremely closely together. We recently opened up a PXG store there last November, which is our one of our first international locations outside of the US, where we're actually, you can get fit for a set of clubs and get your clubs built at the same location. So we have a fitting studio at our build facility right there just outside next to Heathrow. So it's pretty cool.
That must be a very cool facility to be able to get fit and then to have your clubs built on site.
Yeah.
Do you have, I remember when I was at Mercedes-Benz, you know, we had workshops and we were really part of this evolution of the brand to, you know, bring the service side, you know, I guess I'll equate that to the club building side, into the customer space, and we put windows in the workshops and let people see the technicians working on their cars, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 cars, and it really put a bit of a balance of pride into the technicians. You know, they were on display. Is that sort of the same? I don't know. I haven't seen it there in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same. I don't know. People like that show How It's Made because there's just this general intrigue of like, how does stuff actually get made? There, you could go get all, you know, you go through your fitting and then literally if you want to maybe go see the build facility, you can probably go do that too. You can see the time that it takes from someone literally getting a head out of a box, getting a shaft prepared, getting so soup to nuts, how it actually becomes a golf club. That aspect's super cool. And one of the things that is not really available from everybody.
Yeah. I saw it many times firsthand at AMG in Germany. They have a one man, one engine philosophy. So I don't know. It's been a long time since I've been there, but if, in the past times, if you had a Mercedes-Benz AMG, one person would build your entire engine and they would have their signature stamped.
Yeah.
They had a little plate on top of the engine. And I'd been there with clients or staff from Australia, and there'd be people coming from all parts of the world and they'd have a bag or something like that and they'd have a gift and they'd want to meet the person that built the engine in their car. They were that happy with it. And it's to that little point there. I've had many customers in the golf retail environment, you know, just the simple art, I call it an art, changing a grip. Oh, can I watch you change a grip? Yeah, no worries. You know, it's like second nature. It happens 40 times a day. And like, oh, wow, we didn't know how that happened. Oh, it's pretty simple, but that's amazing. So I can see how that as a retail experience really does work in that environment. How many PXG-owned stores do you have in the States? So I see there's a number of, you know, PXG branded retail stores in America.
Yeah, I believe there's 22 at the moment.
Yeah.
I know there's several, quite a few more coming this year, but I believe it's 22 at the moment.
Okay, and that's obviously an important part of, you know, setting the brand up and highlighting, you know, that the brand is there. But I guess then the general retail availability in America, you know, where do you find PXG in the States?
So you can. a lot of golf courses. So we have partnerships with a lot of green grass golf courses around the country. We have a lot of mobile fitters that will travel around to golf courses. So, you know, if a golf club that you're a part of, you know, will likely have a PXG fitting day once or twice a month, or, you know, kind of as needed. Our guys will actually come out there with their, you know, 300-400 shafts and all their different head combinations. It's quite a bit of a different experience than just a golf course having like a fitting kit or a fitting bag where they've got 20 shafts and five heads. When we want to have all the options available. So in the U.S., obviously, so you have our 22 store locations. We have fitters that are all over the country. We also have a team inside that works inside of PXG, kind of just handling, you know, some player support, customer service kind of sales that people may be in an area that's a little bit remote where they want to get the product and they just don't have a fitter in the area. So we sell direct in the U.S. pretty much primarily. And then we still have some wholesale partners as well. So we work with partners like Club Champion, right, that do also a fantastic fitting job. True Spec Golf in the U.S. that does a fantastic fitting job. So we work with other wholesalers as well.
Is there a PXG fitting philosophy? You know, we've got some of the brands that, you know, quite adamant, or, you know, they have a defined philosophy around their fitting. You know, is there something like that that exists, you know, emanating from PXG based on, you know, Mr. Parsons saying this is how I see the brand operating and being fit, and this is the type of way that we go about it?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not a fitter for the, I mean, I have done some fitting in my past life.
Yeah.
For a few other brands. I've never actually been a fitter for PXG, but I think one of the things that you know, we've done a few times is just give us a chance. Like, if you can come, if you bring us the golf clubs that you're using today, if you bring those to us, 99% of the time, we could probably fit you into something of our product with the right shaft combination, grip combination, head weight combination that's going to be better for you. Right now, we just can't see enough people we want to see as many people as possible. And, you know, our network is still just a little bit too small in the U.S. and will continue to grow, though, throughout the years.
Well, I can guarantee you from a drum and golf perspective in Australia that my colleagues all very much operate in that way. You know, we really do place an importance on giving value to the customer. And certainly if someone's looking to invest in a brand like PSG, we want to make sure that they walk away knowing that they've got something that outperforms what they've been using. Whether they've been using it for 2 years or 10 years, we want to at least be able to demonstrate that. And that's how we go about it. That's what we do all day, every day. So if that is a key part of, you know, hitting the PXG fitting point in store, we do that in our sleep. So I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing that grow.
And one other thing I'd say, Ross, is just like, I mean, the training aspect cannot be overlooked by any means, because I think the training, whether it's at drum and golf or wherever it is, the training is so important. And that's a big thing that we spend a lot of time with our own fitters and our own staff, just constantly doing training about new products, different shafts, different grips. I mean, without training, like, so I'd say that's probably one of the most important things that, you know, how do we tell that training story across different retail, which is, I know, something that we are working on for Australia, and we will be talking to Drum and Golf and any of the other partners that are going to be dealing with PXG in this coming year.
You come from a shaft background before PXG, and one of the things that's an absolutely super important part of fitting is this shaftology, as I sometimes refer to it. You know, how important is that, and what's the PXG shaft philosophy? You know, do we have a super wide range of shafts to be able to fit with, or do we have a bespoke and select range? You know, how does that work for the brand?
Oh man, we could talk for a whole nother podcast just about golf shafts. But answering your question today, like, I think it's why if you walk into one of our stores or you get one of our mobile fitters or you know, we have hundreds of shaft offerings. And we actually have somebody on the team that all they do is just try to just sort of work through the different shaft profiles, shaft differences and uniquenesses, and pair them with PXG product to see what's going to perform better or worse. So like, we carry all the major manufacturers' shafts that are out there. We carry some of the smaller brands as well. You know, the shaft is extremely important. Like, the shaft is one of the most important things that comes into making a golf club correctly for you.
Now, I'll just chime in and give anyone that might be thinking about investing in PXG some comfort that it's great for a fitter to have access to a absolute end-to-end profile of shafts. What you don't have to worry about is being confused. You know, I think when you might hear that and think, oh, too many choices, so much options, I'm going to be bamboozled. But I guess the skill of being a fitter and doing it a great job with it is understanding, as you said, that training point, understanding the profile of each shaft. And within several swings, you know, you can usually help a customer identify where they're going to fit in a type of shaft. And, you know, all shaft manufacturers have similar profiles across, but they all have their own individual unique feel. And that what makes shaftology, as I use that term again, so special. So a good fitter can really identify, I think this profile of shaft is the best one. We've got five to choose from. I think the three are going to, you know, and really just try and simplify it. And, but you know that if it's not right, well, then there's something that will be right. And that's a really cool thing to be able to have access to, rather than just two or three and everything else is an upcharge, or it's a custom order, or it's a US build, or it's this, that, and the other type of bespoke type of thing. Now, I don't know how that's going to work in Australia, but just a good fitter will be able to identify what profile of shaft for you and give you a good choice and help you identify how that's going to benefit your game. Did I sum that up correctly? Is that right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think most fitters, you know, they could probably watch you swing five swings and they already know probably a few profiles that you're going to be fitting into. And even in my own personal golf game, you know, my game hasn't changed a lot in 20 years. Like, it's not gotten much better, not gotten much worse. And I fit into the same type of profile, no matter, like, you know, so I can test three or four different brands. And looking at the profile, I can use the similar type of profile across these several brands. So a proper fitter with the proper training will be able to identify that really quickly.
Sam, at the other end, I've been playing for a long time and I'm getting a little bit towards an age where maybe I've slowed down a couple of miles per hour. The vanity, the ego has to be put aside. That's a very hard thing for me to do. And I have to move out of a profile that I've been using for a long time. You know, as you just said, you've been using that profile for a while. I'm now at the stage where I've got to look for something else that's a little lighter, maybe allow me to maybe increase a few mph, increase a little bit of spin rather than the low spin shaft where the ball just loses distance and drops out of the air. So again, you know, there's going to be people in your camp that are going to like a profile and have used it and are familiar with it, can do that job. People like me maybe need to look at something else, and that's a time, you know, break point to change a set of golf clubs. You can do that job as well. So that's fantastic.
You could take the same profile, Ross, and just really just lighten it up a little bit if that's what you need. I mean, because the profile actually is going to stay very similar. Yep. It's just maybe you need a little bit less CPMs on there, so it's a little bit not quite as stiff.
Yep.
But it likely might be the same profile.
I mentioned ego. I'm parking that aside because some people from the other brands have mentioned the word graphite. And, you know, for me, you know, it's just I have to accept that I'm getting older and maybe that time is there about. But anyway, we'll see. I might look forward to testing that with some PhD clubs. Who knows? Chris, you know, if there's anything else that we need to cover, is there any other points there? You know, we've talked about the brand and how Mr. and Mrs. Partisans have, you know, built this great brand and the philosophies and all the things that they do, how that's coming to Australia. We're going to see it more widely available. Some of the success you've had in other markets, and a great range of products. Is there anything else that we need to cover off that we haven't, that we've missed, that you'd really like to leave the Australian market and the other people from around the world? We do get listened to in the UK and America. Anything that we need to do, or have we summed it up pretty well?
No, I feel like you've summed it up really good for today. And, you know, I'm excited, like I said, for the partnership with Champion Sports down there. I know they're really, really invested into trying to bring the PXG experience to the market there. In Australia and New Zealand. So, I feel like you covered it well, Ross.
Thank you. What we might do as a follow-up down the track, when we, you know, see the clubs being hit and fit and out there in the market, we might maybe get one of your engineering colleagues. You know, we didn't deep dive into that space. That's a whole nother gamut of, you know, as you said about shafts, it's another podcast, engineering and the evolution of technology in the PXG brand. We know it's technology rich, but, you know, I know a lot of people get intrigued by the differences in technology and being able to compare technologies from brand and company to another and evolutions of technology. So we might get one of your colleagues involved in the down the track and have a chat about that and really tell the next level of technology story for the PXG brand. What do you think about that?
I think it's great. And because, I mean, I think a lot of golfers, you know, even I was that, I've been that same skeptical person, is like, you know, every year you're telling me this is better than last year and this is better than last year. I think a lot of people kind of roll their eyes at that. But I think when you talk to whether it's Brad or Mike or one of our other engineers, like they'll walk you through why this product now is better than the product we developed last year and what they're trying to do to develop an even better product next year. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it's possible, sometimes it's not. I mean, you know, I'll give you a good example with our Gen 6 irons that we have today. Like we released those last year. And by all accounts, we should have released a new iron this year. But that iron is really good. It is still one of the best performing irons out of the market. So I know the team was scratching their head, is like, Bob, I don't know if we can have a product that's better than this other product. And not saying that we won't have another iron, because I'm sure we will. But you do get to a point where, you know, are you just releasing products to release products, or products actually better than one the previous product? And I think that's when you talk to those engineers, they'll tell you. Because I mean, USGA sets rules and so does the RNA on what you can and can't do with golf equipment. And so you're kind of stuck in these parameters, and a lot of those haven't changed for many years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think talking to one of them would be really insightful and very, very interesting as well. I'll tune into that one too.
Well, look, we know that that's a fact, you know, having experience with all the brands, you know, and, you know, there's no secret, you know, every brand is doing what you've just articulated, building new products with varying cadences. But, you know, someone like us, you know, we sit there and hit them and test them, and we know, because we get to see it all day, every day, that if there is a claim about forgiveness or there is a claim on a product performance, it's usually spot on. And again, you know, sometimes, and I really do respect a brand that is able to say, you were not releasing a new product this year when the evolution might have suggested that we should. I like a brand that can do that and sit behind the product that they've got in the market at the time, going, that's what we have right now, and it's as good as anything out there, and we don't need to evolve it just for the sake of doing it. I really do like that. Very good. Chris, well, it's been an absolute pleasure to spend, you know, half an hour with you, learning a bit more. Appreciate your time coming onto the My Love Golf podcast. We're right behind any of the introductions that you do in the drum and golf space. And I can only wish you all the best of, you know, with this relaunch, I guess, or the reintroduction with Champion Sports. Great team, as I mentioned at the start. Looking forward to catching up and seeing the journey unfold, and maybe catching up with you down here. Or I think I mentioned at the start, I'm moving the podcast to Scotland. You said you like Scotland, so maybe I'll have to see you over there.
Oh, I Scotland's one of my favorite places in the world. So, but I actually enjoyed my time in Australia tremendously. So I'm looking forward to going back there, and I'm looking forward to going to Scotland too. So, see you one of the places for sure.
Well, that's, I sometimes do this, you know, like the outro leads into another question. Where did you play in Australia? What you were just down here at the end of last year, towards the end of last year. What did you like about Australia? What did you see?
Oh man, I actually loved Australia, and I came down during the winter time, as they called it, which was not really a winter time. I mean, it was a bit chilly in Melbourne for sure, but you know, compared to where I am in Canada, I'm like, that's kind of a normal day most of the time. You know, the people were great, the food was fantastic, the coffee in Melbourne was one of my favorites. You know, I ended up playing at New South Wales, which was a tremendous, unbelievable experience. Reminded me actually very much of some of the courses that I've played in Scotland. You know, we went up to Queensland as well, and, you know, spent a couple of days in Noosa. We went diving up at the Great Barrier Reef. Like, you know, Australia is such a huge country and a very diverse place. And so, we were only there 2.5 weeks, but I could have easily stayed, you know, 2.5, 3 weeks, 4 weeks more.
Well, you've got plenty of reasons to come back down now, and look Absolutely. Forward to either catching up here in Australia or in Scotland. We can do both if the opportunity presents. But right now, Chris, thanks very much for joining us, and we'll look forward to catching up with you maybe next time on the My Love Golf podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Ross. See you later. Take care. Bye.